This podcast is brought to you by Podcast Nation.
Welcome to Raw Beauty Talks. I'm your host, Erin Treloar. Ready to peer behind the highlight reel and all those polished pictures of the world's biggest influencers and wellness experts? We're going to uncover what beauty, health, and wellness truly means in today's world. As someone who really struggled with disordered eating and negative body image, I became a health coach because I'm passionate about redefining health and wellness so that it's less about the weight on the scale and more about how we feel. Let's pull back the curtain for some raw beauty talks.
Did you know that the human mind-body system is wired for approximately 15 close, intimate relationships? Only 15. And that you'll have 5 people in your innermost circle that you are closest to. But what's like an average or the quote-unquote right number of people to have in your community? We talk about this with today's guest. We also discuss things like what to do when limiting beliefs pop up about yourself or when you're feeling emotionally dysregulated or like your nervous system is dysregulated. Today's guest explains what somatic work is and why it's so important. And we talk about when a relationship triggers you or you feel lit up by somebody, as I often say, how much responsibility do you need to take around working on, your response to the trigger, working on the feeling that you have around it? And when do you know that it's just time to set a boundary with somebody or to release them, to release that relationship and to move on? In today's episode, I discuss all these things and more with spiritual revolutionary artist and internationally best-selling author, Sa DeSimone. Sa is somebody who I've followed for a long time. He is known for hosting the top-rated Spiritually Sassy show and for creating the Somatic Activated Healing Method. Sa works in the spiritual care department at Cedars Sinai Hospital and is a guest lecturer at Columbia University. His remarkable contributions to homeless youth in Venice Beach, California, earned him the CARE Award from the city of Los Angeles. This is a beautiful conversation. His ability to take complicated ideas and ideologies and to simplify them into phrases in particular that will really stick with you is incredible. So I know you're going to take so many things from this episode today. I feel so lucky to be in Sa's presence and to share his work with you. So Sa, it was almost to the day 2 years ago that I sent you a DM. I said, "Hi, Sa," heart emoji. "It's 2 a.m. and I'm in the kitchen eating cereal because I couldn't sleep. I came across your page and wow, it turns out you are far more comforting than Cheerios. Thank you for being you. I'm going to go to sleep now."
You trying to make me cry, girl, and give me some goosebumps all over my body? Oh my God.
So 2 years ago, I had 2 little babies. Well, I guess they were toddlers. And I went through one of my biggest breakdowns, hormonally out of balance, completely burnt out, and having the most intense intrusive thoughts, anxiety, panic attacks. My medication wasn't working. Like that night that I messaged you, could not close my eyes because of the intensity of being in my body. Mm-hmm. And so, I got up and I went downstairs and somehow I came across your page and your messaging was like a weighted blanket. Mm. It was the first time I heard somebody talking about not believing your thoughts. And these thoughts were torturing me at this time. Like I was so attached to them. And your delivery of the messaging, you are banging on your drum and just looking at the screen, "Do not believe your thoughts. Do not believe your thoughts." And I was like, okay, I'm not going to believe my thoughts. Yeah. And then the movement and just the joy that you bring to your messaging, even though it is dark, serious conversations that we're having really hit me hard. So I feel so grateful to be sitting here today. And it's very easy in life to get better, to feel better, and to forget how far you've come. And so obviously it like all comes back up sitting here with you right now. And I just want to say from the bottom of my heart, thank you for being you and for showing up in the way that you do, for the work that you do. I know it is not easy. And you serve with such purity and love and kindness, and you really are saving people's lives and giving them hope. So thank you.
Damn. Ooh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And it's, I have to truly receive from the eyes of a living body, of a sentient creature, of a spirit that's blooming and blossoming. Because it's often I hear these messages on DM, on email, on even a passing stranger on the street, but I don't have the context. So hearing you name that like this, where we can entrain each other, where we can intoxicate each other with our heart and centeredness, it's beautiful. So thank you. Thanks for giving my life purpose, you know? Yeah.
Well, you are or seem to be really rooted in that and living in that. And I would love to, oh my gosh, it's always such a big question. I would love to know, who is Sa?
Yeah.
Where did Sa's story start?
Okay.
Give us a little context for those who are just meeting you right now.
Okay, thank you. So 10 years of deliberate, disciplined, consortive effort to be sitting here and feel like I like myself and I like what I'm doing and I like the life that I've created and that I continue to create. But the journey started 12 years ago. It was the fall of 2012. I had been working in the fashion industry. I was the co-founder and creative director of an international fashion magazine. It was amazing. We were working with all these high-profile people in the music and the film, the TV, and the fashion industry, A to Z. From A to Z, we were working with everybody. To give you some context, the very first issue of the magazine, when I was 23, we put Cindy Crawford on the cover. So that's how bold and audacious and radical we were. We were like, we're going to bring Cindy Crawford back and we want her on the cover. Somehow, I'm 23 years old and I'm in LA driving a minivan, showing up to this mansion to be the creative director of this photo shoot with these photographer and stylist and set designer who are like twice or maybe even three times my age.
Wow.
So give you some background. Fast forward from me being 23 to now I'm 26, turning 27, entering my Saturn return. Fall 2012. Also remember, esoterically speaking, that December was when the world was supposed to end. December 21st, 2012, apparently the Mayan calendar was ending, which meant the human calendar would end too. I wasn't subscribing to any of that. To be honest, December 21st, 2012, I was drunk and high at Berghain in Berlin. A month before me going to Berlin, I overheard two of my closest friends speaking about how they wanted to buy me out of the company, how they felt that my contributions weren't congruent with the direction that the magazine was going to go. I hear that and I run outside to my balcony, not my balcony, my staircase, New York City, seventh floor. I smoke maybe like five cigarettes in the course of 10 minutes, like an insane person. And no shame on that. And the thoughts passing by my mind, it's either you jump, because if you don't have a job, if you don't have the name, if you don't have the money, coming from an immigrant, brown body, queer body, this was the gig. Money, power, fame was the gig. I had to have it. And if I didn't have it, that meant that I had lost it and there was no reason to keep going. You know, I had lost the game, exit, out. So I thought maybe it's time to jump, you know. And I had already danced with ideation from a very young age. I had experienced 2 weeks of debilitating suicidal ideation when I was 16 years old to the point that I couldn't get out of bed. And I couldn't explain, I couldn't name the experience I was having to my mom. or to anyone. I didn't have language. I just felt like I didn't want to live. That's for another conversation. So instead of jumping, I rolled my shoulders back. I took a deep breath and I walked into my business partner's office and I said, okay, cool. I heard the whole conversation. They were shocked that I had heard and I was like, you know, hey, I heard. I want out. So I said, I want out. And then I walked away and this was the greatest and most horrific walk of shame of my life. I tried to get a job in the industry for about a year. After that, no one showed up for me. And that's when I went to Florida. I said, okay, I can't be in New York if I don't have this, anything to show for. Because at that point, my self-worth was directly tied to what I had to show for. I had no sense of self if I didn't have the power, the money, the clothes, the whatever. I didn't have anything to show for, so why would you be anywhere? So I went to Florida and I started researching. Very basic. I said, what is the point of life? What is well-being? What is spirituality? What is happiness? I was so desperate. I was like, I thought I had the gig sorted, but it didn't play out the way I thought. I'm feeling so lost. And Google, bless the internet gods. Exactly.
It's good for something.
Literally, I ended up planning this entire trip to India because all the answers were leading me to South Indian gurus, to some Buddhist resources. So I'm supposed to go to the south of India. And then maybe like a couple weeks before leaving, okay, a year and some has passed after the breakup in New York. I had been in Florida, getting into meditation, changing the way I ate, you know, enjoying the sunshine because it's a natural resource that I need to feel present. Like I kind of understanding that like I'm connected to life, you know, that I'm not like this strange alien creature who doesn't belong anywhere. That feeling started to subside just a little bit. Not enough that I felt peace or well, by no means, but enough that I was like, oh, okay, cool. All right. I just started to understand life in an entire new way. And then my dad comes into the house and says, you should go to the north of India. You should go study with His Holiness, the Dalai Lama. I said, Dalai what? Excuse me? What are you talking about? He says, look him up. I think you'll like him. I looked him up, my dear. And the rest is history. I saw his photo online and there was that cliche of a thing. It felt like we had done this many lifetimes. It felt like this
was a soulmate.
Yeah. Like a deep connection.
Yes.
And then I went to India, did a 10-day silent retreat, meditated on death, learned that we have this innate goodness, this unstruck benevolent spirit that I, growing up queer in a Catholic country, then moving to Florida, I was not trained to believe that there was something good about me. I was trained to believe that there's something undeniably unwell with who I am at the core of my being. And through that retreat, I cracked open. I was like, oh my God, I was fed a lie. I don't know who I am. I don't know what the gig is about. I am so, so I found this thirst for solving the riddle. I found this thirst for solving this enigma of being human, of finding ways to make sense of the pain from being alive. And I finally heard the words, being human is painful. Now, what do we do with the pain? That's where we have choice. How to relate to the pain is how we have choice. Do we add suffering to the pain or do we open up to grace, surrender, acceptance, presence in the face of pain? And I had never heard that before. I thought I was maybe a drama queen who was always having something hard going on in my life that therefore I needed my depressive episodes, therefore I needed my addiction episodes, therefore I needed my anxiety driven life as a support system to kind of just make sense of the riddle of the pain of being alive. I was like, oh my God, thank you. Someone's finally saying this foundational truth that I can, that is, I'm feeling myself relax, you know, finally. So I leave that retreat And after 10 days in silence, I had never spent an hour quiet. So imagine 10 full days of silence. It was insane.
Uncomfortable.
Yeah, deeply uncomfortable.
Uncomfortable, physically uncomfortable from my understanding, emotionally, mentally uncomfortable.
The full scope. And then after the retreat, I got to sit in the audience of His Holiness. The Dalai Lama is giving a talk. And I look around and I'm like, you guys, have they sprayed something in the air? What happened? I have never experienced presence like that before. I had never not had an ongoing stream of discursive thinking, narrating, criticizing, judging myself and the environment. I had never experienced a moment of internal peace before that. And I wasn't really doing much. I had never experienced my breath deep and long, not shallow and clavicular. Mm-hmm. I had never experienced my jaw relaxed and my shoulders relax and my palms not sweating, you know, and me not like having all my fidgety little things that help me to just be here. It was the presence of this holy being that entrained the entire room into being here and now, mm-hmm. and allowing all the, you know, passing sensations, the painful experiences that comes from being a human body, to experience it with spaciousness. I had no idea that there was space between me and the thoughts, me and the feelings, mm-hmm. me and the sensations, me and phenomena. Mm-hmm. At this point, I thought I was part of it all. I thought I was it all. And then 2014, I go into a 30-day silent retreat.
Wow.
And that's when I had a psychotic break. That's when I believed that my entire family died. I literally lost my mind in a foreign country. I was in Nepal, in a monastery in a hillside. But that's when I really started to get a glimpse of like, oh, I have lived in a way that I'm not proud of. Mm-hmm. And wow. And however, even though I've made mistakes, big and small, the way I have interpreted those mistakes were not the truth, the inherent truth of the mistakes. The mm-hmm. depth of the mistakes didn't match the depth of the intensity that I was feeling. Does that make sense?
Right, yes.
The
yes,
stories
yes.
I was telling myself about the ways I've lived, the stories I was mm-hmm. telling myself about the quality and the intensity and the darkness and the suffering that the mistakes had caused weren't the truth. Mm-hmm. The ways I was interpreting the mistakes were cooked into me by biological markers, meaning mom's trauma, mm-hmm. grandma's trauma, intergenerational clusterfuck, excuse my language.
Yeah.
And now that I have esoteric understanding, we can look at scientific evidence, right? Oh, wow. I have all this unloved, unmet, unexplored aspects of my being that have been passed down to me mm-hmm. from all these generations that didn't say no to the abuser or who didn't stop themselves from being the abuser, you know, all of that in me. And now looking at esoteric data, karma, I also have all these previous iterations of myself that have caused harm. So the ways I'm relating to the world, you know, are exacerbated by all this stuff, all this backlog. Mm. That's what the retreat was. And then through the practice of silence, through the practice of stillness, slowly, slowly, I started to realize that the gig was get free and help other people to become free. Mm. Help other people to become free and you get free. So that sort of puzzle started to make itself known to me. And then slowly, slowly, I got back to New York City and then one thing just led to another. Next thing I know, I was bringing meditation far and wide, you know, and wrote my first book and it just all kind of went. And then here I am.
When you're existing now from this space and you have success, you've written two internationally acclaimed books. You
technically
have
three.
Okay, three books.
I know.
You have an incredible following. But like, how does it feel different than version 2.0 of Sa, who had all of that but was like grinding in fashion and... Mm-hmm. Like, can you pinpoint some of the shifts that occurred? Because some of the external things are still there, for you now. But it sounds like you're in and seems like you're in such a different place.
Oh, completely different. The backbone of the drive was, how could I offer peace to whoever I come in contact with? Mm-hmm. You know, how could I bring this sense of relaxation and ease to anyone I come in contact with? Doesn't matter if they're popular or not, you know? And a lot of my training has come from showing up to an orphan center in Indonesia and Nepal and just saying, how can I help? You know, my clinical training as a hospital chaplain, that has come from actually being in a hospital setting. But what led me to be in that setting wasn't clinical didactic training of school. It was just showing up and, how can I help? How can I be of support here? And then slowly, slowly realize that it doesn't matter if you're popular or not, all humans struggle with the same two things: want to be happy and don't want to suffer. You know, and from creating an emotional regulation training for a group of orphans in Indonesia to explain about the power of breath to a rehab center in Nepal, to the homeless shelter work that I do here in Los Angeles, I think it's all the same, you know, even to the dead body that I hold their hand for 2 hours at a hospital here in Los Angeles. I think we all want the same thing. We don't want to be alone and we don't want to suffer. And how do we become happy? And what is this happiness? It isn't this capitalistic God narrative that we have propagated and subscribed to. That isn't the gig we all kind of know, but we forget very often. I think I see so often, even people in the psychosomatic spiritual space, so driven to create a name, to have a message, to be unique. And, you know, these are all tentacles of this very sick system, you know, that says there's only a room for some of you at the top, that there isn't abundance to go around, you know, and you can only relax once you achieve this.
Fast forward to the end of 2024. Think of your goals for a second. What can you do right now to give yourself the best chance of succeeding? If you want to learn a new language, you absolutely should get Babbel. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that really don't help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversation, and Babbel's tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teachings so you're ready to practice what you learned in the real world. If you're heading to another country anytime soon, start using Babbel a few weeks before you go to learn basics like how to order food, ask for directions, speak to merchants without having to consult language apps while you're away. So fun. Here's a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now, get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/rawbeautytalks. Get 55% off at babbel.com/rawbeautytalks. That's spelled babbel.com/rawbeautytalks. Rules and restrictions may apply. This episode is brought to you by LolaVie, an award-winning hair care line founded by the fabulous Jennifer Aniston. Jen got tired of the same old struggle we all face, choosing between hair products that work and ones that are actually good for us. With LolaVie, that dilemma is history. We all put our hair through the ringer. That's why it's crucial to have products that not only repair the look of the damage, but also shield your locks from future harm. Enter LolaVie's bestsellers, the Glossing Detangler and the Perfecting Leave-In Conditioner. They're your hair's new best friends. For a limited time, you get 15% off your entire order at LolaVie.com. Just use the code RAWBEAUTYTALKS at checkout. LolaVie is all about naturally derived plant-based goodness. No silicone, sulfates, parabens, or gluten. And of course, cruelty-free and vegan. That's 15% off your order at LolaVie.com with promo code RAWBEAUTYTALKS. You can only use one promo code per order and discounts can't be combined. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Tell them I sent you over. I want to touch on something that you mentioned in your story, which is this idea of not feeling pain, but pain being such a, it's just part of life. It is.
That's right.
It is part of our human experience. However, we've been programmed or conditioned to avoid pain and seek happiness. Mm-hmm. You practice Buddhism, as far as I know. Mm-hmm. Can you talk to us a little bit about how this causes struggle, how this causes pain? And
we're just going against reality. We're just going against reality. It's like we are going against the nature of reality.
So reality is, as a human being here on earth, you are going to experience pain.
Pain, period. If you understand that and realize that grief is weaved with the fabric of life, that loss is part of the tapestry of humanity, that in itself should bring you to your knees. Mm. If you haven't been touched by grief, then you're kind of, you know, bless your light for another few years. But once you do, you understand that you may not be sick right now, but sickness will find you. Mm. You may not have been greeted by the Lord of Death, but she will come for you. Mm. It is just an inevitable thing. Aging, sickness, death, it is part of the gig. If you keep fighting with another anti-aging, another biohacking your way into longevity, if these are all parts of your vernacular, you are perpetuating the narrative that pain is something that I can avoid. Mm. And for as long as I can avoid, I'm well. However, truth of wellness is you actually being okay with the fact that pain is inevitable. Now, am I trained into how to handle the pain? Or do I overeat, masturbate, drink? I mean, plug in your poison. We are in a culture of distraction. The gig is, how quickly can I distract myself from experiencing the pain of being alive? We put on pedestals. We put on magazine covers. We built our identities around people whose lives are driven by distraction. Their entire days are built around this toxic mantra of booked and busy. And how busy you are and how booked you are is your unconscious way of running away from being in this human body, of experiencing the grief, of experiencing the pain. And the more relaxed you are in your body, the more you actually are able to tap into the grief of the world, tap into the chaos of the world, tap into the suffering that comes from being alive. And you're not afraid of it. It inspires you. It drives you, not in a nihilistic way, but you just realize that just like me, she suffers. Just like me, they want to be happy. And because of that, how could I rehumanize the experience? How could I reach out? How could I engage, you know? And so you stop running away from reality and you stop going against the nature of reality. And you're just like, okay, cool. Wow, I have to unfollow all these people because they're preaching happiness. They're preaching a wellness that is just a lie. And I call it a lie now because I find it truly hurtful. And also understand this, I can come to this conversation humble enough to know that I've been there too, that I was also running away, that I had spent years of my path distracting myself from the deep, uncomfortable, unpleasant feelings that were surfacing in my body constantly. I would go on a run. I would eat a specific way. I would have a series of tonics that I would take. I had a breathing practice. I had a mantra practice. I had a meditation practice. I had a dance practice. I was doing all the things, but I didn't have the backbone of feel to heal. I didn't have the backbone of like, how could I not think my way out of this chaos? How could I not think my way out of this riddle of being alive? But how could I feel my way? That requires you to go on the journey out of discursive thinking, out of narration, out of conceptualization, out of pathologization into the abstract realm of the felt sense. And that is something that we're not educated yet. We haven't prioritized it as society. And me and my work right now, you're catching me at the wake of a massive change that's about to take place. In the next few years, astrologically speaking, I will be doing a lot less talking, lot less educating in this didactic way. It will come through symbols. It will come through art. And I'm so excited because I am tired of talking. Not right now. I'm so energized by you. I'm so energized by this. But I'm just so tired of this space of everything has to be educated through five steps of this to feel this. This isn't the gig. You know, this isn't the gig.
You've been meeting people where they were at, though, because collectively, we've needed almost, it feels like, five steps to understand mindfulness or five ways to practice breath work or to get into the body. Even now listening to you, I'm like reflecting on an interview that I just had and we started talking about aging. And I'm 39 and I'm noticing the wrinkles. I'm noticing when I open up Instagram, it's like how to remove your eye sags, how to hollow out your cheeks, how to keep your hair like there's just a constant bombardment of messaging. It feels right now like it's less around body image, the size of my body, and so much is around anti-aging. So the tendency is like, I want to go get Botox. I might do this thing where they take a needle and they inject it into a capillary and they fill it up and it like makes my body want to
vomit.
Well, so this is the thing.
Yeah.
I know what will happen when I get in that chair is just so much disappointment in myself and a visceral feeling of rejecting it, like it not actually feeling good in my body. Mm-hmm. But the pressure is so real and so there. Mm-hmm. And so practicing self-compassion for all these parts and all the inner dialogue that's going on and just like trying to almost float behind all of the narrative. And when I do that, even sitting here right now, like there's so much grief and sadness.
And that's great. That means you're touching the most vulnerable core, you know?
It's so fucking frustrating.
Mm-hmm. I've spent thousands of dollars on my face to try to correct the acne scars. Mm. And then when you sit in front of the celebrity dermatologist, surgeon, whatever, on Sunset Boulevard. And they're like, how about a little bit of this here? How about a little bit of this there?
Yeah.
And then you look at their resume and you have all these popular faces and you're like, I want that too. Mm-hmm. And you do it and you do it and you do it. And at some point you're like, fuck this. It will never end because we're addressing, as my ex-partner would say, a God-sized hole that no Botox will fill, no filler will fill, no stuff will fill. There's no amount of new car, new iPhone, anything that will ever touch that sense, that thirst, that discontent, that insatiable something is missing feeling. But I think one beautiful way of touching that God-sized hole is connection. We can't be by ourselves dealing with the chaos and the pain of being alive. It's too heavy to do it alone. You know, you look at First Nations, you look at the longest living people, you look at the healthiest people and the wisest and the most peaceful people in the world. They're surrounded by community. And this is something I explore in the book. It's we are driven to think that if I get this thing done, then I will be able to hang out with these people and then that will fulfill this thing and that thing will lead to another. We are constantly thinking that if we add more of this, then we're going to reach this place and we're going to feel okay. And that okayness will then lead me to that vacation with these friends. But what if you just had to stop all of it? Mm-hmm. What if you just had to unplug from the way you're doing the gig and shift the attention and the energy towards the people in your life that you're neglecting because you're so thirsty to fulfill the need for connection, but you're not addressing as a need for friendship. You're addressing a need for looking a certain way, for presenting a different way. But what if that longing, that nagging in the body wasn't for Botox? I'm using this just for the context.
Yeah, no, this is great.
What if it wasn't for Botox? What if it was for for friendship? What if it was for intimacy? What if it was for a shoulder to cry on? What if it was for a hand to hold? What if it was for a head massage? What if it was for a sentient body, a human body that could look back at you and validate that you're okay? Mm-hmm. What if it was that you're longing, not all this bells and whistles, not the decoration on a Christmas tree, you know?
Yes.
The book touches that. It's addressing that core, that vital need that we need each other. Mm. That friendship is a biological, psychological, and spiritual need that isn't addressed as scientific evidence of a need for wellness, you know?
So one of the messages that you've really driven home to me, or that's really landed, is this idea of not believing our thoughts. And when there's chaos in the mind, when the mind is in that anxious, paranoid state, whether it's about getting Botox or needing more money or wanting this or desiring that, that it's an invitation to get into the body. And so I would love for you to share with people what somatic work is and how they can use the chaotic thinking and the things that are maybe giving them pain. And listen, like when I talk about pain, it's not always this big, massive, debilitating pain. There's pain all around us in the simplest things, desiring of something that you don't have and believing that when you have that, it will bring more happiness. So wherever you're at right now, talk to me a little bit about that.
I love this. Thank you, Erin. And for the sake of context, I'm not a somatic therapist. The somatic work that I have created, the movement language that I have developed, has come from truly learning about my inner world on the dance floor, sober dancing, to create some foundation for people. And that then bridges the work that I do now, where I train therapists, I train people in clinical settings, my movement language, to understand the somatic work that I do, which supports the work that they do in the therapy room. So the foundation is this: if there's tension in the mind, there's tension in the body. If there's chaos in the mind, there's an unfelt feeling in the body. There's an unmet need in the body. We are so trained to think our way through life. However, when you realize that your thinking can only get you so far, that your intuition and your felt sense doesn't come from more thinking, that it can only drop and download and appear and make itself known to you through presence, that thinking about the future or worrying about the past will not solve the riddle, will not bring you into the present moment. No healing happens in the future or the past. It can only happen here and now. How do we access the here and now? By being in our bodies. The body is always in the present moment. The breath is always the gateway to the here and now. So if the mind is going haywire, and we're using the big word paranoia, right? The thinking has gone from intrusive to very debilitating, where we're actually starting to give in to the narrative paranoia, right? To use a psychobabble here, which is very important too. A lot of people experience paranoia and don't even know that they're in a paranoid state. Bring it up to your therapist. Bring it up to your medical team. It's important that you look at that, because it's debilitating to live with paranoia. I lived with paranoia for about a year, and it was insane living with that.
What was your paranoia around, if you don't mind me asking?
It was, I mean, it's layered. It requires a little bit more context, but it was that I had done something so bad and there's people coming to get me.
Right.
So every time I would see the police, they were there for me. So imagine seeing a cop car going about their fucking business. Oh, they're coming for you, you know?
And the reaction that paranoia causes in the body. It's
God, insane. You're constantly contracted.
Yeah.
You're constantly rigid. You can't breathe. Your senses are driven to fulfill the narrative of the paranoia. So if your senses are driven to fulfill the narrative that the paranoia is true, then you're constantly in a state of like, you know, in other words, you're just crumbling constantly, you know? So the baseline is this: if your mind is going insane about whatever it is, what if you brought your attention out of the thinking process and into the body and traveling through the body? And you may have to start, if you don't have a somatic practice, if you don't have a mindfulness practice, if you don't have a meditation practice, you may have to put your hand in your body. Mm-hmm. Where do I feel tension in my body? And oftentimes it will be, you know, two of the main big centers for mm-hmm. big chaos is like the belly area or mm-hmm. the chest area. You could immediately like put your hand there and you start to, oh, wow, it's in my belly. That is my, it's literally, you know, through all these years, it's still where I feel the big tension. And what we want to do is to not engage with the stories and go be with the feelings. Mm-hmm. And being with the feeling requires you to bring all of the energy of your mind, all of your attention there and touch it with the light of your awareness. And all of this may sound a little spiritual fluff, but it's not. This is where you crack the code. Mm-hmm. Next time you are spiraling and you are literally trying to solve your suffering by thinking your way through it, see if you can travel your awareness to a place in your body where you feel tension and be with it there for a moment mm-hmm. and just see what happens. Because what happens is feelings have a natural cycle. They come and go. Mm-hmm. However, what keeps them staying, what gives them power, it's the stories we tell ourselves about them. So what we want to do is disentangle from the thinking and engage with the feeling. Mm. And it may not make sense right now, but if you do it one time, mm-hmm. something will unravel and then something will open up. I think a really viral content piece of video art that I made that maybe landed for you too. Mm. Was stop giving meaning to every single feeling. Mm. What if for a while your entire practice with your felt sense was to not interpret your feelings as the barometer of reality, to not interpret your feelings as messengers of the truth? But what if just for a while, or maybe just for today, your feelings were simply asking you to be met with a deep breath, to be met with presence, with grace, with sweetness? What if you stopped neglecting the tension in your body and just brought awareness to it?
I love that. And one of the things that you talked about was imagining that your feelings are like children wanting to be seen, wanting to be heard. And that visual for me gave it so much texture. This is an exercise that I'll do with clients when we're talking and I can start to notice the narrative and the emotion coming up as we just close our eyes and we notice where in the body there's tension and we see it. We'll give it a color and notice the texture or the weight of it. Does it want to move up or down? Does it need to be held? Sometimes I'll be called to ask, does it have an age? First thing that bubbles up. And what I find really interesting about that is when they say the number, almost always there's something at that age that was the bullying, the mom and dad separating, and it's this pain body that's just been held that doesn't need anything other than to be seen, to just for someone to sit beside it, to witness it. Mm-hmm. And like a wave, almost always it gets a bit more intense, not going to lie. And then it subsides and there's an opening and a sense of grounding into the body. Okay, there's one more thing that I want to touch on here.
Please.
If the reaction is hysterical, it's almost always about something historical.
Yeah.
Talk to me about this.
So oftentimes, if our relationship, if how we are feeling in relationship to the present moment does not match the context of reality, it's pointing us to something that's historical, meaning something that could often say that it predates you. Mm. So it didn't start with you, that it's something that happened when you were in your mother's belly, when she was pregnant with you, and there was all this chaos between mom and dad or family member or whatever, or money issues, or maybe wasn't even mom. Maybe it was how grandma was mm-hmm. abused and never stood up for herself because she never had the courage, or she was always, anytime she would step up, she would be told to play small. Mm-hmm. So all that has been cooked into all of us. We can look at the scientific evidence about this, or things that may have happened in this lifetime, or maybe things that predate you. But if it's hysterical, it's historical, it's an opening in the context that I'm going to share for you to not end relationships, to not end friendships, to not cancel people or cut people out of your life too soon. Mm-hmm. Because your response to how things are going may be exaggerated or under because of something that you have responsibility mm-hmm. on to look at that you haven't from the past. Mm. And the way to do it goes back to what Aaron was saying, goes back to what I was sharing. Go to the body, feel the feeling, unplug from your devices, stop everything you're doing, lay on your bed, name it out loud. I feel really unpleasant feelings in my belly. Oh, wow, I feel it in my chest now. Oh, my God, I feel it in my throat. Mm. And then you may notice it's almost like a creature that moves through you and out of you, you know? So if it's hysterical, it's historical. Notice how often you order your cappuccino, and if it's not foamy enough or hot enough, you literally overreact in the back of the Uber. And all of a sudden, the Uber speaking in a foreign language is the most awful thing, and you feel disrespected by it. You feel so deeply hurt by the fact that there's someone speaking a foreign language in front of you in the car, that they're there to serve you. You feel taken advantage of. So minor infractions are seen as massive transgression in the body, in the mind, in the experience of someone who has a lot of emotional baggage, a lot of unmet feelings from the past. So this is the hysterical where it leads to historical. So this is a little something for people to catch in. And in the context of the book, it's really important that we really take responsibility for how we are reacting to the present moment and not blaming our partner, lovers, friends, family members for how we feel. No one could place a feeling inside of you. That deep anger, that deep abandonment, that deep sense of rejection, the deep loneliness that you're experiencing was already there. They were just a little bit of sunlight and a little bit of water to the seed of chaos that was already inside of you. Mm. Now, the seed was in your garden. The weed is inside of you. It is your job to weed it out. It's your job to do something about it and not blame them for showing you that these are weeds and this is not the harvest.
How do you know, though, when you are in a relationship, maybe it's a romantic relationship or a friendship, where what's the line? So here's the thing. My tendency is if I'm noticing something is being lit up in a relationship or a friendship, I go inward. I look at what's being lit up. I think sometimes, though, I do struggle with setting a boundary or knowing when it's not just me. Like, we can spend so much time doing this work on ourselves, but how do you know when somebody is crossing the line and a boundary needs to be set versus you just continuously doing the work?
Sure. That's a really good question. And I'm going to offer two answers to that. First, we have to analyze, are our boundaries built around protecting our peace? Because if they are, then you've missed the purpose of a boundary. A boundary is supposed to keep you in integrity. A boundary is supposed to keep you in congruency with your intention, with your needs, with what you actually value in life, not as a way of protecting you from annoying experiences or annoying people or annoying exchanges. Because if that's what your boundaries are, this very immature approach to boundaries are actually going to lead to a very lonely and sad life. Let me just offer you that first, right? Now, in the work of the book, the foundation of this book, Spiritually We, is built on knowing that 50% of the work has to be done between you, your body, your mind, your story, your heart, your lineage, right? Everything that's inside of you. And 50% of the work has to be done between you and your community, you and your friends. So when do I know if I've done the 50% and when it's time to see if the 50% is sustainable, is balanced, is embodied, right? That's when we can test. So to just offer just a little bit more context, have I become more forgiving on the meditation cushion by myself? Wonderful. Are you able to be more forgiving with that friend who makes the mistake, or to the partner, or to the in-laws, or to the parent, or to the child? Can the forgiveness that I have landed at be a bridge to more connection, or be a wall to, I know how to forgive myself and I don't forgive you, you know? Does it make you feel like holier, or does it humanize you to understand that we all fuck up? Excuse my language. We all make mistakes, that we all cause harm. So we have to understand that. And then now, to answer your question more specifically, I just wanted to offer some nuance to it, because it's a very good question. We have to know if the people that we are wanting to call in, I don't use the word call out. If we want to call them in, are these the people that we would qualify as the core five or the 15? Mm-hmm. In the book, I speak about the Dunbar research and the Dunbar numbers, which are cognitively knowing that we only have access to knowing at any given time 150 people at any given moment. Mm-hmm. So the idea that we can know people beyond 150, given faces, personality, feeling, like understanding people in this way, beyond 150 is not cognitively capable for how we are wired. So we go from the 150. This is your entire community. This is entire people that surround you. You go to the 50, and you go to the 15 and the 5. We don't have time to explain the 150, how they are in your life, the 50. But I'm just going to speak to that question. And the listeners should get the book and read about the 15 and the 5. But Aaron, if this person that you feel is constantly bringing forth these feelings, bringing forth this narrative, if they are in the 5 or in the 15, then I do invite you to call them in to what I call your inner world. And in the book, I speak about this. It's, hey, when this happens, I feel this. And when I feel this, I think this. And when I think this, I want to do this. Let me give an example. When you don't text me back, when you don't greet me good morning in this way, when you don't say goodnight, what could be the simplest things, I feel abandoned. And when I feel abandoned, I think about all the ways that I was rejected. And when I think about all the ways that I was rejected, I want to go back to my addiction. I want to drink, I want to smoke, I want to binge, I want to plug in your poison, right? If you invite someone into that place, you're not going to do this with people in the outer 50 or the 150. You're only going to do that depth of intimacy, of relating with your 5. And then you're going to bridge with some people in your 15. I have people on, I have a note to my, on my computer right now, two people that I have to call in. I don't have the energy right now to do it. I will call them in, because they navigate 15 and the outer, but I know that they want to be in the 15. If you want to be in the 15, so we need to have a call in. A call in is like, hey, love, when you say you're going to do this really important thing for me and you, a week goes by and you don't do it, and then I have to remind you about it. And after reminding you, you still don't do it. You say, I'm going to get to it tonight. And I know you have two kids, and I know all these things are happening. I know all that. And you don't do it. This is what comes up for me. If you're going to be in my core 5 or in the deep dance of the 15, this can't happen. Because I show up for you with integrity. When I say I'm going to do something, I do it. So you got to know, is this a person where conflict is for lovers? Or is this a person where conflict is you knowing that this person does not need deeper intimacy, but they need space? That's when we have to dance the dance and know the difference, you know? So I write about this in detail in the book, because I think a lot of us don't know. We think that once we become empowered and we know about boundaries, that we need to be constantly naming our boundaries and constantly naming how we feel to everyone and everything. But I guarantee you, you're going to do this for a few months, maybe even a year. Or some people actually do it for a lifetime and they become so bitter and profoundly lonely because nobody wants to be around someone who's not, you know, actually able to take account for what they're bringing to the situation, you know? So, yeah, it's important that you, like, slow down and realize, is this someone that I want to call into a deeper intimacy or is this someone that I actually just need to give space? But no. Are you someone that historically is constantly pushing people away instead of letting them know, hey, when this happens, I'm going to use your context for now. When this happens, it actually, unfortunately, and I'm not blaming you for it, I'm actually bringing to you what happens inside of me. I actually want to binge. And when I want to binge, it brings me to the eating disorder again. And I don't want that. I don't want this in my life. So I want to bring this to you. So you know that when you tell me you're going to meet me in this ways and show up for me as a friend in this way and you don't do it, this is where I go. Let them surprise you. 9 out of 10 times, if you bring someone to that depth of intimacy, you're going to be like, oh shit.
Yes.
Oh fuck. Okay. I learned my lesson. Lesson learned. I'm going to prioritize you because you've shown me something that I didn't even know about myself, you know, like that.
Beautiful. And I love the role play and the example because these are hard, vulnerable conversations. And we are not taught how to show up in this way, right? We're so used to all the distracting and everything. I hope as you're listening to this episode that you feel invited to just notice when pain shows up for you, when those intrusive thoughts show up, when the anxiety or the worry or the monkey mind is there. And you use it as an invitation to come into the body and to get to know yourself and your feelings, those little children, a little bit more intimately. You have to go follow Saw on Instagram and everywhere that you are. I mean, you really are such a positive light on my own feed. Where else can everybody find you?
Thank you, love. I think what I want people to do, because we are so deprived of connection, find me on social, but go buy the book. Go read this book. 100%. I narrate it too, if you like the sound of my voice. Or go read the book so you can highlight and make notes and do it as a with a group of friends or with your closest friend as a way for you guys to know, like, oh, wow, I could show up in deeper ways. And here's what I'm learning, you know.
I want to give away 5 copies of the book. I'm going to purchase it in support of Saw. And I want to send them to you, those in the audience. All you need to do is make a comment on this episode, either on Apple or Spotify, wherever you listen. Let Saw and I know one thing that landed for you. Saw, thank you for joining me today. It is an honor to spend time with you, to be in your presence. I just want to like plug my nervous system into yours. And yeah, I can't thank you enough.
Thank you, love. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate it. Feelings mutual.
Thanks for taking the time to listen to this week's episode. Please take a moment to rate, review, or follow on your favorite podcast app and share this episode with someone that you think could benefit. Join the Raw Beauty Talks community at Raw Beauty Talks. And remember, it's your story, your body, your mind, and your journey. So think about what resonates with you and leave the rest behind. I'll see you next week.
Do you ever feel like you're struggling through motherhood? You're not alone. I'm Erica Jossa, host of the MomWell podcast, therapist and mom of three. Join me each Wednesday as I sit down with guests, including psychologists, pediatricians, psychiatrists, fertility specialists, lactation consultants, and more to unravel the myths of motherhood. With expert advice, practical tips, self-love, and some coping skills to help you along the way, you can become the mother you want to be. Listen to the MomWell podcast at momwell.com/listen or on your favorite podcast platform.